We are the Cat's Whiskers, and this is My Top Line. Hello and welcome to another edition of the My Top Line podcast. My name is Jono Bullard and I'm delighted to say we've got another guest who is going to reveal his top line and favourite moments from the Coventry Blaze this time. And I'm delighted to welcome their lead commentator of the Blaze webcast, Ed Kimbley.
Hey Jono, how's it going? Thank you for having me on, I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's going very well. Thanks for coming on. It's an absolute pleasure to have you. So you support the Coventry Blaze. You're the lead commentator on the Blaze webcast every week. But how long have you been following the Blaze and when was your first game?
So I actually remember my first game. We got free tickets through the school and I think if memory serves, it was the first year the Sky Dome opened. And the Blaze played out of it. So we got free tickets to the school and we were sat in the away block, which was block two back then, and the Blaze were playing the Slough Jets. So I would have been 10, maybe 11. And after about 4 or 5 minutes, a fight broke out. And I remember my dad turning to one of the Slough fans sat next to us. He goes, oh, does this happen a lot? And he was like, oh yeah, every game, it's great. I mean, it was the old BNL back then. So it was kind of like the wild, wild west. Yeah, it was just amazing because we'd been season ticket holders at the Sky Blues since I can remember. And I never really felt comfortable in that atmosphere. And a little personal story, if you don't mind, was I remember once getting up to go to the toilet as like a 7-year-old, like halfway, you know, maybe 3/4 of the way through a half. And the guy, a guy shouting at me like, oh, can't you just hold it until the period break? And I thought that was kind of strange. And then, you know, here we are sat surrounded by away fans who are just talking about the game and, you know, I guess realized that we'd never been to a game before and were talking to us about it. The fact that they were so welcoming and not even in their rink, it was amazing. And we became very, very quick converts to the Coventry Blaze and, you know, never really looked back.
Of course, you've seen a lot of success over your years supporting the Blaze. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, you are the lead commentator on the Blaze webcast. So how did that come about?
Rob Coleman, who's the ops manager for the Blaze, was, I can't remember whether he was lead or colour for the first couple of years of it. And then he got the ops manager gig, which meant he couldn't fulfil that anymore because he'd be busy on game night. So I got asked by Paul Wheeler, who was doing the commentary at the time. I mean, we were playing beer league or rec hockey together, however you want to call it. And do you fancy coming and trying out and doing a game? And I said, yeah, sure. And, you know, the only experience I'd had at the time was commentating on myself playing EA Sports NHL, you know, and from watching games. So it was a real eye-opener. And yeah, they just never got rid of me. They've kept me around. So it's been a heck of a ride. And, you know, I've learned so much. And honestly, I have the best seat in the house. I have, aside from playing, I think I have the best job in hockey right now.
And of course, that has led on to other things. You've commentated on Great Britain friendlies. Mm. You commentated on a Nottingham Panthers home game that was live on YouTube. So how are those experiences?
GB's been incredible. And obviously Andy Buxton being the chairman of the Blaze and heavily involved with GB, I guess has got me a little bit of a foot in the door there. But that experience has just been amazing. You know, I'm never going to play professional sports, Jono. You know, I've never been much good at anything like that. So this is my little way of representing my country. So I'm extremely proud of that. And I've been able to take my dad to experience that as well. You know, he's a big hockey fan. He's a Blaze season ticket holder. He's supported me the whole way. So to be able to sneak him in the door in a few games and experience that with him has been priceless. And yeah, the Panthers game was cool too. I didn't want to let anyone down. I woke up with the flu. I was dying. I was really not feeling good. And I kind of went through with it. And then I think the Blaze had Dundee the next night. I could barely speak for that game, but you know, it was a heck of an experience, and it was not the first time I've commentated there in the Nottingham Arena. I've done a couple of playoff games for the Blaze when we've been there in the final weekend for radio, yeah. And that's been really cool too. I really love this, and I know you've kind of dabbled as well, and you're heavily involved in it, and it's just so much fun being able to be as close to something that you love, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Great stuff. Well, we'll move on to your Blaze team. So as ever, you've picked a netminder, two defensemen and three forwards. And we'll also talk about your favourite game, your favourite goal, favourite opposition player, favourite moment, and there'll be some honourable mentions as well. So that'll be towards the end. But as ever, we start with the netminders. So Ed, who is the netminder you've chosen?
Yeah, I think for any Blaze fan, it's always a bit of a 50-50 between two championship-winning goalies for the Blaze, and I decided to pick Trevor Koenig for mine.
Trevor Koenig, who played for the Blaze in the 2006-07 and 2007-08 season, 129 games in all competitions for the Blaze. Incredible regular season stats, 102 games, a 2.14 goals against average and a 0.929 save percentage. He won two league titles in his two seasons, a Challenge Cup and a British Knockout Cup. He also won the playoffs with the Newcastle Vipers in 2005-06. So, Ed, why particularly Trevor Koenig over anybody else who might be mentioned a little later?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the 50-50 is kind of a toss-up between Trevor and Jody Lehmann. I think I was a little bit older when I was watching Trevor, and I think that made me appreciate just how talented he was. He dominated the crease. And watching some of the games back that, you know, the retro games that the organization had been streaming through YouTube over the summer, over the elongated off-season because of the COVID situation, you really appreciated how good he was. He was an amazing shot stopper. He dominated the crease. You know, he was able to play the puck, you know, as good as anybody. And you think about it, you look at Trevor and you think he did that. And we were talking about this before we hit record. He did that wearing, you know, leg pads that were, you know, pretty old. And I think I think the regulation changed. They reduced the size that you were allowed. So he kind of dug some out of the closet. He had a mismatch catcher and blocker. You know, he had a San Diego goals paint job from the old WCHL. But he was just incredible. And he would steal you games when you had no right to win games. Not just with the Blaze, but, you know, his time with the Vipers. I mean, that Vipers team was okay. You know, it wasn't poor. But, you know, he led them to a cup. And crazily enough, you know, 6-7 years later, he emerges out of the blue and he keeps net for Dundee as well. And, you know, his character as well. You know, he was so good. And he just fit with the brand. And, you know, his interaction with the fans was great. It's always going to be a bit of a toss-up because of what Jody was able to achieve and how he grew the brand from the BNL days into the Elite League days. But I think Trevor was an elite netminder.
I've often heard it said that the reason you won the league in both the seasons that he was with you was because of him. I know a few Blaze fans do share that sentiment, but is that something that you think as well? Was it mainly down to Trevor Koenig that those Blaze teams won those two titles in the seasons he was there?
No, he wasn't a one-man band, you know, Johnny. Some of the rosters that Tomo had put together, you know, those couple of seasons were illy. You know, you're arguing that 06, 07, whichever the Nazarudin and Simonton year was, I get those two mixed up sometimes, whichever year that was, you know, people compare to the Grand Slam year of 04, 05, you know, which team was better. And we were talking to Paul Thompson about that on the Blaze podcast not too long ago. He's an elite netminder, but he wasn't the sole reason that the Blaze had that amount of success. But look, as you know, you can have a great team that score a lot of goals, but championship winning teams are built from the net out. You know, you need to have elite net minding. Trev was, you know, in net for the Blaze really early on in the Elite League era. You know, we're talking quite a few years have gone by since then. And in my opinion, and I talk about this a lot away from the mic, you know, I still think the league was trying to figure out where it was at. You know, it was still growing. It was still really young. You know, the Super League had crashed and burned and the, you know, the Elite League was trying to be sustainable. And Trevor really turned teams on to, okay, elite net minding is key if we're going to have success going forward. And I guess another reason why I threw him into the mix for that reason.
Okay, we will move on to your first defenseman. So, Ed, who is defenseman number one?
It can only be Neil Martin.
Of course, Neil Martin, four seasons with the Blaze between 2004-05 and 2007-08. 3 league titles, 2 Challenge Cups, 1 British Knockout Cup and 1 playoffs. He also won a playoffs with London Knights in the Super League era as well. 235 games for the Blades in all competitions, 39 goals and 118 assists for 157 points. Now, I think I probably know why you've chosen Neil Martin. I think why any Blaze fan who saw him play for the Blaze would have chosen him anyway. But do tell us, why did you choose Neil Martin?
Yeah, if you've maybe not been watching Elite League hockey for that long, you don't remember Neil Martin, and you need a comparable, look at Gleeson Fournier in Cardiff. Really similar players, elite skaters, in terms of speed, agility, balance, all that good stuff. Their ability to, command the ice. And as well, not be any slouches in their own zone. We don't really talk about this much anymore, Jono, but you used to talk about offensive defensemen and then like stay-at-home defensemen. And I think as hockey's developed and the technology's developed, generally, we don't really have that so much anymore. You kind of just have a two-way, if you like, defenseman that can cover all three zones. And Marty was one of those. He could do it all. And, when you talk about a guy, he played the Blaze 4 seasons, I think it was. And when you talk about a guy that played that short a period of time with an organization, and the question is, should we retire his number? Should you retire his number? You've had something special. And again, I talked about this with Trevor Koenig and a little bit about Jody Lehmann. He developed that Blaze brand. He came in that second season, Coventry were in the Elite League, after making the switch from the BNL, and he turned them into a powerhouse, and the Coventry Blaze were a powerhouse, in 04, 05 through to, 2009, 2010. The game's developed so much, right? But if you took Neil Martin, if you took a 30-year-old Neil Martin and you put him in the Elite League now, he would still cut it without a shadow of a doubt. Superb player.
Yeah, I mean, this is a player who played with the London Knights at Super League level. Mm. And the Super League is regarded as the best level of hockey that's ever been played in this country. So like you say, a 30-year-old Neil Martin would probably tear up the Elite League even now, even with the standard that has improved over the seasons. But what was it about him particularly that made him special?
A lot of it was his charisma. And I think as well, obviously he wore letters with the Blaze. He was an assistant captain. He commanded the room. He was great with the fans. I mean, the story goes that Neil played one game in the American League. If I remember right, it was Portland. And he had 2 assists in that one game. And that was it. Never played in the American League again. Neil was just 10 years too soon. If he was 21, 22 years old, 10 years later, he would be knocking on the door of the NHL. He had that skill. He played in the DEL. Even after he left the Blaze, he went, spent a couple of years in the Danish league as well. He was just an extremely high-end skilled hockey player. But back in those days, if you want to have a comparable with what kind of guy was playing in the NHL on the blue line, look at the guy next to him, Wade Belak. They wanted big dudes, were able to clear the crease, able to throw the body. They didn't have to necessarily skate so good, but it was kind of all about clearing the net for an area and taking away those hard areas. Nowadays, we've kind of come to the point where you can have guys that are under 6 foot easily playing in the NHL and rely on their speed, their agility, and the hockey sense. And that's kind of where Neil was at and why he was so special and why it was so amazing that the Blaze could keep hold of him for so long as well.
Big part of the success over that time, he never actually wore a C for the Blaze, always an A. Yeah. But he was a huge contributor to your success in those 4 seasons he was with you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, again, it's hard because it's a visible thing, right? In football, you have the captain's armband. In hockey, you have a C or an A on your chest. But that doesn't necessarily mean there aren't other voices in that room. I mean, generally, it's just you've got designated guys that can talk to the referees or just for something on the, on the stat sheet. Neil would definitely lead in that room. And yeah, I think it was clear to see on the ice. So there was a story where Blaze were nearly going to get caught too many men on the ice. I can't remember what season it was. I just remember it being a really close hockey game, maybe 1 goal in it. Marty was almost too many men on the ice.
and he just head first Superman dived over the boards, and you could just see his skates, his graphs, just waving around in the air because he just swan dived over the boards to try and avoid a penalty. You know, he just did whatever it took. He wouldn't do anything that he wouldn't expect his teammates to do either, and they respected that. And you know, you could see that they fed off that.
Neil Martin, your first defensive pick, and clearly a Blaze legend who is still much revered in commentary even these days. We are going to move on to your favourite game now. So, Ed, reveal your favourite game in all the time that you've been watching the Blaze.
Yeah, I think for me, I had to go for the 2014-15 playoff final against the Sheffield Steelers.
So on the 5th of April 2015 at the National Ice Centre in Nottingham, the Blaze taking on the Sheffield Steelers in the playoff final and coming away with a 4-2 victory. Goals from Steve Gertsen, Jeremy Tendler, Ross Venus and Ashley Tate. In the same weekend, they also beat Belfast on penalties to make the final. So, Ed, why particularly that game?
I've kind of cheated a little bit because that weekend was very special to me in general. I got asked last minute to go and commentate on the semi against Belfast. True story, I was on the way to the Genting Casino, the Blaze title sponsor, to watch the game with my dad. And Rob Coleman rang me and he said, you know, where are you in Nottingham? I was like, no, I'm just watching the game in the casino. And he said, how quickly can you get to Nottingham? Because we need a commentator for the game. And I was like, oh man, I'll be there in 45 minutes. So I managed to turn the car around and hightail it up there. And then I didn't get to commentate on the final, but Andy and Mike Cowley kindly put me in one of the executive boxes that they had. It was pretty incredible. You know, we were surrounded by the families of the players, Andy and Mike. And at that time I was 24, 25, and I'd been watching this club since I was 10 years old, and I'd been involved doing commentary for kind of a few years, 4 or 5 years at that point as well. And to be able to not only watch my team succeed, that I was a little part of, but when the Blaze were in the last minute, the box emptied and we all went down to ice level, and Todd Kelman kindly sweet talked a security guard to let us go through so we could get onto the ice. So there's a picture somewhere of me with the playoff trophy standing on the ice. And those are memories that I will never lose. And those are memories that I hold extremely dear. Like I said earlier, I will never play professional sports. This is the closest I'm going to get. And to be given the honor to lift the trophy with the team, it's just incredible, John. And I can't describe how amazing that feels.
I totally understand where you're coming from, because we very quickly had a conversation to set this up, and you sent your list in very, very quickly, within minutes, when we have people who take weeks deliberating over what their team is going to be. So it was incredibly impressive that you sent your selections so quickly. but I looked at this game and wondered why you chose it, considering there's been so many special trophy wins within the time that the Blaze have been in existence. And I did wonder why you chose that one. And that just... it says it perfectly, because it was just incredibly personal to you.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, you can have guys throughout their whole career and that have never won anything as a player, and they'll never get to experience that. I got as close as you're going to. And you know, I really, really, genuinely love what I do, and I love the Coventry Players organization. You know, Craig Summerton's a really good friend of mine. He runs kind of the media side of things now, and you know, I WhatsApp him about 5 times a day. I think I really get on his nerves because I just kind of want to do stuff during the summer, and I kind of just want to get content out there and, you know, just do what I can to grow the sport in Coventry and to grow the brand in Coventry. And I do a lot of that through the commentary, I think, and I've tried to keep it straight down the middle. I don't call it with as much bias as I could probably get away with, because I just want people to love the game as much as I do and understand the game. Hopefully understand it more than I do, because I don't profess to know and all that much. But that being under the umbrella of my brand, you know, the Blaze brand is really important to me, and having that product with Blaze stamp on it is huge for me. That season, you know, we were making really good strides with what we were doing technically. And I think that was one of the years where I really started to figure out who I was as a commentator. And then to be honoured with it, being asked to do BBC Coventry of Warwickshire was crazy. You know, you grew up listening to the Sky Blues. It was the football back when I was a kid, but you listened to that on the radio. That was a big deal. And then for us to come away with the trophy. And because I can't remember who scored the first goal in that game. I think it was Gertsy.
It was Gertsen, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it took a crazy tip from a point shot. And Sam Gertsen, his wife, was stood next to me. And she's quite a little lady. She's maybe like 5'11". And she tackled me like an NFL linebacker. And the passion in that box was something special as well. And it was like being part of the family, truly and deeply part of that family.
I particularly enjoyed that game as well, simply because my wife is a Steelers fan. She was very heavily pregnant at the time.
Oh, really?
I was stood next to her, and we was quite thankful, because I think if it had been a Steelers win, there was probably a chance of early labour, but thankfully that was...
Well, I had the experience the year after of the opposite, the real low swing when Mika Wiegman shut out the Blaze 2-0 in the final. And you know, in the kind of the concourse area outside, they've got the suites and the balconies. And you know, we commentated on that game. We did some media stuff, and we were scuttling out late after the game, and the Panthers players were still showing off the trophy to 300-400 Panthers fans underneath. So
yeah, on the balcony, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So we've been from one extreme to the other. And but like you said, hey, like as a Panthers fan, anytime the Steelers get beat in that building, I suppose it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's leave the game there and move on to your second defenseman. So, Ed, who's defenseman number two?
I deliberated over this very quickly, and this was one I probably put the most thought into, but I came around to my second defenseman being Mike Egner.
So, Mike Egner, three seasons with the Blaze between 2012-13 and 2014-15, was part of that playoff winning side in 2014-15, played 147 games for the Blaze in all competitions, 8 goals, 29 assists, and 378 penalty minutes. So, why particularly Mike Egner?
This was one that I thought about the most. I think, you know, I talked about a lot of the tangibles that reasons I chose Neil Martin, you know, in terms of his leadership and his technical ability, because I don't think Mike got as much kudos for how good he was as a hockey player. You know, you see a big 6'4" burly guy that had 320 odd penalty minutes over his time with the Blaze. But you have to look at the adversity he went through in his time with Coventry. You know, he came through a serious illness with Guillain-Barré syndrome, which a lot of guys don't recover from. He went from that to coming back on the ice to winning a championship with his hockey club. I think he was going to retire that year anyway. I think he knew pretty early on that this was going to be his last year in 2014-15. And the emotion that he showed at lifting that cup, and Ryan O'Mara was another one who was going to retire that year and lifting that cup as well. It was something special. So Mike was a warrior, and I used to love the tough guys growing up. I think a lot of guys do. It's something that appeals to hockey fans. You know, he's the pugilist, you know, the guys that will throw the gloves down and defend their teammates. And I don't think anybody, and I'll go out on a limb and say, I don't think anybody in the Elite League era can epitomize a warrior as much as Mike, considering what he went through. And I'm so glad that he's landed on his feet. He's coaching at the Okanagan Academy now. He's a head coach in one of the age groups. He seems to be doing really good. So I'm super happy that he's now able to give his love of the game, his knowledge of the game, to the next generation. I think that's so fitting. And yeah, that's why I had to choose Mike.
And you mentioned pugilist nature there, and you can tell by the penalty minutes that he got over his career that he was essentially a fighter, but he was also a very, very good defenseman as well.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Look, he was a second round pick to Tampa Bay. And I think it was Tomo that said this. I might be misquoting, but I seem to remember reading somewhere, maybe it was his signing PR in the Coventry Evening Telegraph, as it used to be, that he didn't know why Mike had never had a shot at the NHL. You know, he had 4 or 5 seasons in the American League. He'd come close before he hit the vet system and then kind of tumbled down. But yeah, Mike could skate. You know, Mike could shoot the puck. Mike made great decisions. There's a really great picture somewhere of Mike checking I think it's Guy Lepine into the boards in the Blaze where the players come out onto the ice. And those boards are kind of buckling under the weight. He was just a good human being as well, you know, John Owen. And I think this is becoming more and more common. And Danny was talking about this not that long ago, how he wants good people in that room. You know, he will take a guy that maybe has a little bit less skill if he is an outstanding human being as well. As opposed to a guy that maybe you have mixed reviews about, you know, in the dressing room. And Mike Egner is an outstanding human being. He was an outstanding hockey player and a member of this organization for sure. And yeah, I don't think he gets enough credit for how good a player he was.
Okay, we'll leave Mike Egner there and move on to the opposition player who you would love to have seen play for the Blaze, but never actually did. So, Ed, who is your choice?
This isn't just because this is a Panthers-leaning podcast, but I genuinely really admire Corey Nielsen.
Corey Nielsen, Panthers defenseman, Panthers coach, played 6 seasons with the Panthers before retiring as head coach between 2006-07 and 2012-13. 403 games, 85 goals, 300 assists for 385 points. Now, we know that the Blaze and the Panthers don't exactly get on. And during the time when Nielsen was playing was, of course, the famous Team Hollywood, as Paul Thompson so famously called the Panthers at that time. So you're going out on a limb a bit, choosing Corey Nielsen.
Why? Why is that out on a limb? Corey's a legend of the British game.
Absolutely.
And, you know when we look at players that I've picked, you know, we talk about Trevor Koenig upping the level of netminding in the league. You know, you look at Neil Martin, I choose him, and you know, he ups the quality of defensemen in the league. You know, I'm going to talk about my forwards in a little bit, and I believe they were exactly the same. And Corey Nielsen changed the level of defensemen you would have in this league. And he had all the attributes to be a successful NHLer nowadays, right? Because he was a big guy. You know, he could skate really well. He had a great head for the game. It was just crazy because he would make or break games. He could run the best power play in the league and he would score on it. He would make the players around him better. It's not just because he was a great hockey player is why I chose him, but you know, you look at his record as a coach, you know, not just with the Panthers, but you know, in the Dell 2, he's done a great job there as well. And he's going to go on and have a career in coaching, in hockey, that is kind of, I see him going in a similar trajectory to where Rob Wilson is now, because he's doing great. I think he's coaching in Peterborough now in the Ontario League. Corey not only raised the level of the Elite League, but he raised Team GB's level as well. I don't know if he's still involved with it, but I know he was for a while, and he really helped grow GB to where it is now. So yeah, I chose him because I thought he was a great hockey player. I mean, he annoyed Blaze fans obviously because he was a very very talented guy, but if you take that whole package, I don't think you can not choose or not consider Corey Nielsen.
You only have to look at the numbers he put up from defense, almost a point a game in all competitions, and it's rare you see that offensive output from a defenseman.
Yeah, particularly
not in the elite league.
No, I know exactly what you mean. You know, it's particularly for someone that wasn't gung ho either. You know, John, you will remember better than I did because obviously I'd only seen Nottingham a handful of times a year. But boy, could he play in the back end? Now, he did make a lot of mistakes, and you know, there's a reason why he was elite. And we talked about this a little bit with Neil Martin. You know, all things considered, you know, Corey Nielsen didn't play that long as a player with Nottingham. You know, he did for a handful of seasons. They retired his jersey. You think about jersey retirements, and we're talking about the Coventry Blaze. You know, you're talking about guys like Russ Cowley, for instance, who was with the organization for 13 seasons, I want to say off the top of my head, or Steve Chartrand, who grew it when they were in Solihull. But, you know, you're talking about Corey Nielsen, who was there for a handful of seasons, and 77 slapped up at the back of the arena, and it's rightly there too.
Just a quick one before we move on to your first forward. How do you think it would have gone down? I know this is all hypothetical and supposition, but how do you think it would have gone down had Corey Nielsen gone to the Blaze as a player or even as coach?
That's a very good question. I think the Panthers fans would have probably been an uproar, But I think...
Oh, definitely.
But yeah, it goes without saying. But I think that the Blaze fans would just have completely bought in 100%. When you take an elite player from another organization, you get a very small minority that go, oh, but he's a Panther, or oh, he's a Steeler, or oh, he's a Cardiff Devil. If they're an elite hockey player at the level that Corey Nielsen was in the Elite League, who cares? That guy's going to win you cups. That guy's going to win you games. You know, that guy's going to put bums on seats and be entertainment. I think any of that reservation from, you know, the Blaze side of things would dissipate very, very quickly. Would it have intensified the rivalry? Yeah, probably. But, you know, then you have to think about what Nottingham would have done to fill the Corey Nielsen-sized hole that he would have left. It's all ifs, buts, and maybes, right? I mean, there was a rumour that Ryan Finnerty was very nearly a Coventry Blaze player before, I can't remember where he went, maybe Sheffield instead.
I think he became coach of Sheffield, yeah.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. So you've got that if, buts, and maybes for quite a few players. I mean, Danny Stewart was talking about Coventry nearly had Blair Riley, and we're talking about modern hockey when Danny was coaching. So, you know, you have that a lot. It's nice to speculate, but it's hard. You know, I think this as well, John. I was 16, 17, 18 when Corey Nielsen was playing in the Elite League as well. So the game was totally different. How fans digest the game was totally different. You know, we didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Facebook. You know, you just had a couple of the forums going on where you kind of got all your rumors and your news. But yeah, it's very different. Very, very different era, the two.
Okay, let's move on to your first forward. So who is forward number one?
Again, Neil Martin was a shoo-in for one of the defensive slots, and my forward one was probably going to be a shoo-in for any Blaze fan, and it's Dan Carlson.
Dan Carlson, 6 seasons with the Blaze in 2004-05, then a season away, and then he played 5 consecutive seasons between 2006-07 and 2010-11. 394 games in all competitions, 162 goals, 355 assists for 517 points. He won 4 Elite League titles, 2 Challenge Cups, 1 playoff and 1 British Knockout Cup with the Blaze. Those are huge figures, and that's a big trophy haul. So is that the reason, or is there more to it?
Yeah, again, I think I've covered a few of the points off already. I don't want to beat the drum and be too repetitive. Dan grew the brand in Coventry. You know, he came in 04-05 after lighting up the East Coast. You know, I think he was 70, 80 points a season in the East Coast with, you know, a couple of looks in the American League. He'd had a standout NCAA career as well at Notre Dame, if I remember right. He just bought in and he just got it. You know, him and Adam Calder, you know, the famous AC/DC partnership, were untouchable for 5-6 years. Dan was a hockey engine. You know, he skated brilliantly. You know, he was typically a center. That's generally where he gets a lot of credit. He was up and down the ice really well. He made players around him better. For someone like me as a 14, 15-year-old when he first signed, you know, when he did that swan dive, I can't remember if this was in the Panthers or the Vipers bench, to start a brawl, he's maybe 5'10 in a year where, or in a league where, you know, there are a lot of big, tough dudes. It just showed how fun Dan Carlson was and how much he enjoyed and loved the game of hockey. If you didn't have Dan Carlson, you didn't have Neil Martin, you don't have the success that the Coventry Blaze have had. You don't have the same brand today. You don't have thousands and thousands of people's amazing memories of growing up with it or being a uni here and watching it or wherever they were in the life cycle of watching the Coventry Blaze. You don't have that without Dan Carlson. And again, he was part of the reason the Elite League got better. It was still so new. It was trying to figure out what it wanted to be. And having elite skilled players like Dan that played the game the way that he did really made other teams pick up their ears and think about how they recruited. And he was, I think, through the university as well. And a lot of teams were starting to cotton on to this as well. So nowadays, if you took a guy that had East Coast stats or a CV like Dan Carlson, you don't really get him. He goes to the DEL, or he goes to Denmark, or he goes to Sweden, or the EBEL. He goes one of those elite top leagues in Europe that are traditional. But back then, you're getting a fresh, young Dan Carlson out of the coast because he wants to do the education. And he tried Germany. You know, he went to the Dell 2. And then, you know, he loved it so much here that he came back. And that meant a lot. And I think to why he would be cemented as my top pick.
It's an interesting route that he took, because he came out of the East Coast and the AHL. played in Coventry in that Grand Slam season of 4-5.
Then he goes to Munich in DEL2.
And then comes back. So it's quite unusual in a way that a player comes in, wins all that silverware, goes to presumably a better job on the continent, and then comes back again and stays for 5 seasons.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that says a lot about the culture the Blaze were building back then. Look, if you have success in sport, that is the highest feeling that you can get. You know, that is an adrenaline dump like anything. If you have that love in the room with the guys, and you're really enjoying what you do. Look, Jono, we're not talking about life-changing money here, right? You know, we're not talking about seven-figure NHL contracts. You know, you're only going to get to do it for so long before the real world catches up with you. Even though Germany would have been a couple hundred pounds a week more, is that worth it in the long run to have, you know, a stable team, be part of a culture, be able to grow something like that? I don't think so. You know, it's easy to say, but if I was in that position, not as if I was Dan Carlson, if I was, you know, playing minor pro hockey in Europe, and I had that feeling, if I caught on with a team in the league that were extremely successful, then I'd be tempted to stick that culture out and stay, because you know you're only going to get to play hockey for so long, and like we said earlier, you get guys that never taste success, so you might as well ride that wave and have fun with it.
So we'll leave Dan Carlson there, and we're going to move on to your second forward now. So who is forward number two?
No surprise, Adam Calder.
So Adam Calder, part of the famous AC/DC partnership with Dan Carlson. He played for Blaze for 6 seasons between 2004-05 and 2009-10. 354 games for 229 goals, 257 assists for 486 points. He won 4 Elite League titles, 2 Challenge Cups, 1 playoff and 1 British Knockout Cup. And his number 25 shirt was retired by the Blaze in December 2015. Tragically, Calder died from cancer in July of 2018. So why did you particularly pick Adam Calder? Was it to join up the twosome?
Yeah, you can't not. I don't think you can. The question to Blaze fans, I think, would be, and I kind of thought about asking a similar thing to Paul Thompson and Danny Stewart and Chuck Webber, was who would your teams be without Adam Calder and Dan Carlson? But, you know, Calder's, you know, he's the yin to Dan Carlson's yang. He was the clutch guy. He had the ability to just find space. He had a lethal shot. The things that maybe Adam, if you look at attributes, lacked, you made up for an abundance in his attitude. You know, you talked about his trophy haul when he was Coventry. He won in the NCAA with North Dakota. He won a Kelly Cup in the East Coast. He then won when he played in the EPL. Or the EPIHL for a couple of years after he left Coventry. You know, he was going to be Brayhead's inaugural coach. That fell through. He was a winner. You know, he knew how to win games. If you had a tie game to win a championship, or you know, even if it was just a game where you were a goal down with, you know, 30 seconds left, you had an offensive zone face-off, you had to have Adam Calder out there. You know, when Ryan Finnerty lifted his trophy as a Sheffield Steeler, he sang, "Who's Adam Calder?" Adam Calder was a complete legend in the Elite League era, not just in Coventry, but in every other team. Everyone wanted to find an Adam Calder, and some teams have got pretty close, but I don't think anyone's ever had an Adam Calder 2.0, and I don't think we'll necessarily see an Adam Calder 2.0.
It's often he's mentioned in the same breath as Dan Carlson. Dan Carlson was your first pick, but really, how dynamic were they as a duo?
Yeah, they were unplayable. When teams were well coached and when teams were prepared to play against the Coventry Blaze, because the prep nowadays, Jono, is completely different to what it was back then, and Tomo was one of the more coaches that was dedicated more to prep. You know, you could try and put a trap on Adam and Dan. You know, you could try and play them out of the game. But some elite players that, you know, are going to score you 30, 40 goals a year might drift in and out of games a little bit. Maybe it's not my night. You know, they're covering me, whatever. Adam and Dan would just keep beavering away. They would just keep chipping away. They would throw pucks in and go get them. They would throw checks. They would forecheck. They did everything. You know, if you wanted them to PK, they'd PK. They had fights as Coventry Blaze players. You think about Joey Martin having a fight nowadays for Cardiff. You think, why is Joey Martin fighting? It was kind of like that for Adam and Dan in a you know, in an era where people would, you know, fight pretty routinely. Those guys were just a lethal combination. And you don't know what you get in terms of recruitment until it walks through the door. I know it's a cliche, but I think it's very true. When Adam Calder and Dan Carlson walked through the door for the first time, I think Tomo wanted to try and get them back as quickly as possible, because those two guys changed the Coventry Blaze and they changed the Elite League as well.
As I mentioned at the start, he tragically died from cancer in 2018. And that was something that was not just felt in Coventry, it was felt throughout the Elite League and the fans and the clubs of the Elite League.
Yeah, 100%. And I kind of helped out Dave Adey a few times, and with he coaches the Coventry Phoenix women's team. And, you know, just to try and, you know, improve my skills, I, you know, and help out, I jumped on a few times, and Adam did too. But Adam was a quiet guy. You know, if you knew Adam, he didn't really say much. But just to be able to sit in a room late at, in a dressing room late at night, kind of sweaty, and, you know, just listening to Adam shoot it, it was incredible. He was just I didn't know him well at all. I'm a professor, and I did. But he was just a really, really nice guy. Really nice guy. And he would try and help you where he could. And Coventry have had it a little unlucky with players that have passed away. You know, I remember when Bielak passed, and Jeremy Domish recently passed away as well. And those are three, in their own different ways, big characters and three really big parts of Blaze history, for sure. And that, I think there are still some raw wounds there, and I think there's still some sadness. And I'm really glad that the Blaze were able to retire his number. I'm glad he was able to see it. I know he's a kind of a shy retiring guy. He didn't really want the attention. I think he said he wanted it just to kind of slip by. Having your jersey retired, as you know, Jono, is the ultimate honor an organization can bestow on a hockey player. And it couldn't have been any more fitting than to Colds, and also obviously to Dan as well, being 50% of that partnership.
Absolutely. Okay. We will move on to your favorite goal now. And it relates a bit to the earlier in the show. So what is your favourite goal?
Yeah, my favourite goal is Ross Venus's breakaway goal to seal the Coventry Blaze playoff championship in 2014-15.
So the 2015 playoff final, the third and game-winning goal at 29-17 of the game. Ross Venus breaks away, dekes the netminder, finds the net, and Blaze were 3-0 ahead. They would go on to win that game 4-2. So why particularly that goal?
That was the goal that sealed the deal. And I talked about being part of, you know, that weekend and how special that was to me. That was the point where it was real. It was like, oh my God, you know, the Blaze aren't going to, I don't think we're going to get caught here. Now, we knew we were good. You know, we the team had got hot from signing Jim Jorgensen in the beginning of February, end of January, around there. Won on a great home winning streak, carried that momentum into the playoffs. Chuck is a great coach. I have a lot of respect for Chuck Webber and what he did with the organization. And that was the moment you realized it was all at fruition, and the Blaze are about to win their first cup outside of the Paul Thompson era. And that was pretty special, and pretty special for Ross as well, because, you know, he had his testimonial year this year. This was 5 years ago now. It's crazy to think, oh, that time's flown by. But, you know, he was a junior at Coventry. He was a kid. I remember him baby face in a full face cage, you know, getting his first couple of games with the team. So, you know, for that goal to be scored by him, again, we talked about Colds being kind of shy and retiring and not really enjoying the limelight as much. Ross is kind of similar in my experience. To have him score a goal like that is pretty, pretty special. And I'm really happy that he had that opportunity and that he was able to take it.
But the thing is, he took it so well, well.
Yeah, 100%. You know, that was a veteran move. And if you think about his teammate that year who scored a big goal in that game as well that often gets overlooked, you know, he was learning from Ashley Tate. Ashley Tate's a product of the Panthers. He had as much hair on his head as he does now back then, but he was, he cut his teeth at Nottingham, and he scored some huge goals for the Blaze, you know, in cup finals and, you know, to seal games. And to have that kind of handover around that time, the changing of the guard almost, That was pretty cool as well. Look, I mean, I think I don't know who's put it up, and I don't know who's got credit for this, but there's a banner with Aaron Murphy's commentary of that goal behind one of the blocks in the Sky Dome, and
I think that's very, very fitting.
Okay, let's move on to your final forward then to complete your team. So, Ed, who is forward number three?
I ummed and ahed about this a little bit as well because the Blaze have had a lot of really talented forwards, like you said, but I settled on Sylvain Cloutier.
Sylvain Cloutier, two seasons at the Blaze in 2006-07 and 2007-08. 127 games in all competitions, 60 goals, 86 assists for 146 points, two Elite League titles, one Challenge Cup and one British Knockout Cup with the Coventry organisation. And of course, he went on to coach the Hull Stingrays. So why particularly Sylvain Cloutier?
This actually was really tricky because, like I said, the Blaze have had some really great players, really great forwards. But Clout was so intense and he was a real all-time hockey player. He was a rugged guy. You just look at him. Go Google a picture of Sylvain Cloutier if you don't know what he looks like. You'll see, actually, you know what? I did this earlier, Jono, because I wanted to just check some stats on him and just to make sure I was getting things right. And if you Google him, or if you do it from an Android device, it comes up with Dan Cloutier's brother, because his brother Dan was playing in goal for the Vancouver Canucks. Which I think is kind of unfair because, you know, Sylvain played in the NHL too. He played for Chicago. But he was such a good hockey player. He did everything. You know, you look at his point columns, he was lighting the league up with goals and assists. You know, he would fight guys. He skated well. He would check guys. He was doing it, you know, he was one of the last guys to keep the visorless. And he wore a captain's jersey, a captain's letter on his chest, because he was the kind of leader that you would absolutely want 100% go into battle every single night. I talk about his rugged attributes, you know, his ability to bump guys off the puck. He had a lot of finesse to his game as well. You know, we watched that Salzburg game, was offered the opportunity to overdub the commentary, which was kind of cool. Klutz would just come out of nowhere and stick lift a guy. And it was like, oh my goodness, where's he just come from to do that? Or, you know, he would just make a quick pass and the game was wide open at that point because of that play. So although, you know, he would bang and crash with the best of them, you could see why Chicago gave him a cup of coffee. You know, he could really play the game at an elite level.
And of course, he went on to coach the Hull Stingrays for five seasons. And was that strange seeing him come back with Hull?
Because
he spent an awful lot of time there, but he did coach there with great distinction.
He did, yeah, no, absolutely. But if you cast your mind back, the Blaze and the Stingrays had a bit of a partnership going on in and
of
around
course,
that time.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was necessarily a surprise, because he went away for a year and I think he was coaching Corpus Christi in the Central League, and then he came back. But no, you know what? He did some little things. If I remember rightly, edit this out if I'm wrong, but he gave Ben Bounds a start. A goalie in the Elite League, in Stingrays organization.
I believe that is correct.
He did some really, you know, excellent little things. And Hull were put together on a shoestring budget, and they did some exceptional things considering, what they were up against. And you know, it was when you could see who was spending massive amounts of money and who didn't really have a pot to fiddle in. Whereas nowadays, yeah, you got your traditional big spending teams and teams that maybe spend a little less, but that divide is a lot narrower because, you know, it's clear that you need a sustainable 10-team minimum league for the Elite League brand to stay as it is. So Klutz was really punching a couple of belts above his weight category coaching the Stingrays, and he made it such a fun brand of hockey. You know, they were really fun to watch, and he had some great players come out of there too.
He certainly did. I mean, the thing I remember about Cloutier when he was at Coventry, and indeed when he was at Hull, was just the intensity that he played with. Such an intense player.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, but you look at when hard work pays off. You know, you look at the amount of hard work the Blaze put in to keep that success rolling. And when Klutz was there for the couple of years he was there, you look at some of the pictures of when the team is celebrating the league or the cup victory, and he's got the biggest smile on his face on the ice, the beer in his hand, you know, baseball cap on. He's loving it. And that you would see that smile after a game when the Blaze had won, you know, no matter what the situation. He worked hard, and, you know, I'm not saying he was a party guy, no, but he played hard too. You know, he enjoyed it.
Okay, so that completes your team. We've got Trevor Koenig in goal, Neil Martin and Mike Egner on defence. Dan Carlson, Adam Calder and Sylvain Cloutier are your forwards. A formidable lineup. I think they'd take anybody on, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And then you can line change with Corey Nielsen if anyone needs to.
Of course, as with any exercise like this, it's obviously a debate as to who you put in your team, and there are some honourable mentions. So who were the players that almost made it for you?
Yeah, I think Jody Lehmann, obviously, for Netminder, was very close. He was with Blaze in the BNL days. He'd had success with the South Carolina Stingrays. He'd come over as an import Netminder to give the Blaze that bit of extra kick in that department. He grew the brand and he won a lot of cups, and obviously he had some similar success in Orange. We won't hold that against him, eh, Jono? But then looking at other forwards as well, because when you have Adam Calder and Dan Carlson, that, you know, that kind of takes up 66% of your forward line without really even batting an eyelid. So I kind of wanted to throw in Luke Foljam because he was a scoring machine as well. He was part of the same successful era that Sylvain Cloutier was involved in. He played, I think, in Sheffield as well. He did well there. Very, very quick, very, very skilled, really shot the puck well. Blaze, you know, he had a good partnership with Owen Fussey, and, you know, those guys would really change games. But then, you know, I really love these two guys, and, you know, they were a big part of this playoff championship in 14-15, and Stephen Gertz and Ryan O'Mara. Stephen was, I think he was the guy that had never won anything in his career at that point, so for him to win, or it might be Eggy, I forget which way around it was, but he loved it. You know, that was very special for him. Oh, because he'd won in Sheffield the year before.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was, you know, that guy that when Lefebvre left, he took on the coaching for a little while before Chuck came in. You know, he just went through a wall for that organization. He was so skilled as well, Johnny. You know, he played for the Blue Jackets. He really loved the game. He had a great family. And Ryan O'Mara was his, you know, his right hand man, and Marzi was a first round pick. Sorry, you know, he played in the NHL as well. He was just an elite player at this level. He was so skilled and he was so fast. And so, if you look back on the playoff final weekend, because those games are available on Blaze YouTube, I believe, you can just look at how he creates and how he sees the ice and how teams were desperately trying to cling on to him to stop him, you know, breaking those games apart. And Ryan is, he's still around. You know, I think he's living in London right now. So we see him every now and then. We saw him at Ross Venus's testimonial. He's such a good human being. He's such a good guy to be around. He lights up a room. I was talking to Russ Cowley, and I noticed that he was talking to Jani Larkkinen. And he was like, hey, you're Finnish, right? And Jani's like, yeah. He's like, hey, I played in Finland for a year. And they just started talking about Finland. And it was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, he'd never met the guy before. And immediately they were just waxing lyrical about hockey over there. And yeah, he was those two guys, and they were very, very special. They're a very integral part of that team that a lot of guys retired, of course. So that's kind of what I mean by that. You know, Ben Arndt retired. Derek Lee retired. There are a couple of other guys in there that retired that were part of why that nucleus was so special. I was very tempted to throw him in there anyway, but I kind of thought I have to go with Klutz instead.
All right, we've got one piece of business left, and that is your favourite moment. So, Ed, your favourite moment in all the time you've been watching the Blaze?
Every time I pick up that microphone, Jono, you know, I'm honoured and I'm blessed to have the opportunity to do what I do and commentate every week. And I could have talked about, you know, lifting the playoff trophy with the team, but yeah, I've talked about it already. So I am truly blessed. I'm truly honored to do what I do. I hope I can continue to do it for a long, long time. And hopefully, I'm still young. I've only just turned 30. Hopefully, I'll be able to commentate on some more championship winning teams soon. We were very close this year. I genuinely believe if we hadn't had the season cut short, the Blaze are going to pick up something. I don't think the league. I think that might have been a little bit too of a long shot with Cardiff where they were at. But, you know, that playoff trophy was looking mighty inviting. And who knows when this will get itself resolved, but, you know, hopefully the Blaze can pick up where they left off. And hopefully if they haven't told me to go away by then, I'll still be behind the mic for it.
Yeah, I can totally empathise with that as someone who does commentate on the odd game. I've never really commentated on the Panthers, but I have commentated at the NIC. And yeah. I remember just having to catch myself a few times as I was thinking, here I am in my home arena commentating on a game. It is incredibly special.
It is, yeah. I mean, I think you do a great job. You know, I've heard you commentate on some highlights and I think you do a great job. So I'd love to hear you get a regular commentating gig somewhere in hockey that, you know, I can pick up somewhere. I'm not just blowing smoke. I genuinely mean that. I've been doing this for a little while now. So for me, I get it because I've been there. But for me now, it's those little moments where something really special happens. So Luke Ferrara's goal right at the end of the game against Dundee, last game of the season before it got cut short, 7 seconds left. They turn the puck over. He goes up and scores on a 2-on-1 with the season he'd just had. You know, you hear that that highlight. You know, my voice is breaking. I'm trying desperately just to keep that contained and not, you know, yell to the rafters. But yeah, those moments are extremely special. And like I said, I'd love to do this for a career. I don't take a penny for the Blaze. And I do it for the love. I mean, I'd love to make a career out of it. But if I don't, then I'm extremely lucky to do what I do. And yeah, Andy, Mike, just please keep asking me to come back and do it. I'd have to play a lot more golf if you didn't.
That's a great place to leave it. Ed, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
No, thank you for having me. I probably broke your length record as well on these things. So thanks for putting up with me.
You're welcome. And thank you very much to you for listening. We'll be back again very soon with another My Top Line. But until then, from us all, goodbye.